Hi, Damien Carrick with you. Welcome to the Law Report.
Office, Christmas party. You work so hard, you need to let off some steam.
Today, office Christmas parties. A time to celebrate, sure. But when things go awry, there can be huge legal ramifications.
Come and see colors galore when Patty from accounting's puking on the floor. Next year you could still have a job if you volunteer to be the DD. Christmas party, we're off to unemployment tonight.
Well, how can you avoid unemployment or something even worse? Lawyer Athena Kohlmeyer is the Managing Director of Workplace Law, a Sydney law firm that specialises in employment issues.
Well, Damien, I think everything about Christmas parties can create legal headaches now. It's unfortunate, but I think part of the problem is that everybody's getting to the end of the year and the usual frustrations that have occurred throughout the year all seem to bubble to the surface at Christmas time. And for some reason, these things do seem to coalesce around the annual Christmas party held by employers. There are so many things now that are creating difficulties. You know, that suggestion that you might have wanted to make to somebody who you thought was attractive throughout the year, but you gathered up enough Dutch courage to make suggestions to them at the Christmas party turns into sexual harassment. The skylarking that you thought was going to be absolutely fine because you felt absolutely bulletproof because of all the beers you drank turns into a really serious injury. Somebody assaults you for no particular reason just because that's how they behave when they're affected by alcohol.
Of course, alcohol seems to be the big ingredient here. But even before you get to alcohol, sometimes traditions as innocuous as the Kris Kringle or Secret Santa present giving, that can actually have serious ramifications, can't it?
That's absolutely right. And there was a well-documented case of the worker who was given the Kris Kringle present, which was a small toy reindeer, which created poop out of its end.
Chocolate poop. The rear of the reindeer dispensed chocolate.
That's exactly right. The employee took that to be a slur on the production of his work, i.e. that his work was, in fact, chocolate reindeer poop. And that resulted in a serious psychological injury claim and then obviously a departure from that employment because he felt that he could no longer work there anymore.
Was there compensation paid in that case?
I'm pretty sure that during the workers' comp process there would have been some sort of compensation paid through the Comcare system. And then obviously there was an agreement reached about his exit from the organisation. So while that sort of information isn't public, I suspect that there would have been some sort of golden handshake arrangement.
Athena Kohlmeyer, there have been a number of very interesting cases this year concerning employees who drank too much at the Christmas party. There was the case of Stephen Keenan and Leighton Borrell-Amy. Tell me about that case. What did Stephen do at the Christmas party?
Well, this was a very interesting one indeed. So this was a 2014 Christmas party at the Novotel Brighton Beach here in New South Wales. The time of the event, which becomes relevant later, was very clearly stated to be 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. There were bar staff who were there who were supposed to be monitoring the responsible service of alcohol, but unfortunately there was also an esky full of bottled beer to which employees just started to try and help themselves after a period of time and nobody stopped them. So at no point was Mr. Keenan refused the service of alcohol, and he gave evidence that I think he'd had something like 10 or 12 beers plus some vodka. So he quickly became intoxicated. He didn't recognise one of his colleagues and encouraged them verbally to go away using the F word.
Told them to F off, I think.
He did. He then was describing one of the board members, which is always an excellent thing to do for your career progression, as the C word. He was having, I guess, a chat-up conversation with one of his other employees who used a pre-arranged signal, which is a great idea, to try and get herself rescued. The rescuer also got told to F off too. And then at 10 o'clock, the time came for finishing. So those were the things that happened during the course of the official Christmas party. As people do, people moved on after that particular official work function and they went to a public bar. Mr. Keenan was quite intoxicated by this time and he kept trying to touch the dimple on the chin of one of his female colleagues, which she didn't particularly appreciate. He then decided to kiss one of his other colleagues. And then on the way out, just, you know, for the avoidance of any doubt, while they were waiting for taxis, he told another one of his female colleagues that his mission was to find out what colour knickers she had on. She told him that they were white and she was absolutely not interested, just by the way, in terms of her evidence.
So what happened as a consequence of this behaviour at the party?
There were a series of complaints made. His employment was terminated for the incidents that happened at the formal work function, at the public bar afterwards, and then on the street in relation to the taxi. And after the dismissal, Mr. Keenan brought an unfair dismissal claim. This one was interesting because normally termination of employment is a natural consequence. But with this one, Commissioner Williams made some interesting comments because he criticised the employer for allowing Mr. Keenan to drink to the point of being very, very intoxicated without any control. So there was very direct criticism levelled at the lack of control in relation to the alcohol. And they also said that the termination of the employment was well beyond what the events at the work function actually warranted, considering that Mr. Keenan was essentially a clean skin and had a good employment record over a relatively long period of time.
So he's successful in his unfair dismissal action.
And that was a bit of a shock to all of us. But what the Commission wanted to make really clear is that there is a line between what is a work-related event where your work performance can be called into question and what happens in an employee's private time. And they said that what happened when the party kicked on to after the work-sponsored official event were things that happened in his private time and couldn't be questioned by the employer.
So it wasn't saying that what took place was appropriate. It was just saying it's got nothing to do with his work and his work performance.
That's exactly right. And so when you look at what actually happened between 6 and 10, there were a couple of F-offs. There was, you know, a reference to somebody as the C-word. And there was a pretty poor attempt, I've got to say, to chat somebody up who was rescued. So those things, taking into account his good record otherwise as an employee and the fact that the Commission said the employer allowed him to become too drunk, they said, look, there were other options available other than termination, like apologies and warnings and stepping down from management positions and other sorts of things that could have been contemplated instead. But I guess it sends a message to employers that if you're going to terminate somebody for what happens at the Christmas party, you had better be sure that what you're terminating them for wasn't something that actually happened in their private time.
Now, that's Stephen Keenan and Leighton Borrell case. It can be contrasted with another really interesting decision from earlier this year, and that was Damien McDade and Future Engineering and Communications. And it's a totally the other result.
It was absolutely totally the other result. Although the events that occurred in this matter all occurred at the official Christmas party. This was Christmas 2014. There was plenty of alcohol available to employees. Mr. McDade became inebriated and started behaving in an aggressive manner towards one of his fellow employees, Mr. Sinner. So Mr. McDade was haranguing Mr. Sinner, pushing him in the chest and finally pushed him fully clothed into the swimming pool, which was at the event location. Mr. McDade in evidence denied that he acted in such a manner or pushed him into the pool, which was quickly corrected by all of the other witnesses who were present at the Christmas party.
Mm. And again, he told his colleague to F off and was asked to leave the party as well, wasn't he?
That's right. Well, Mr. Davies, the manager, went over to him and suggested that he might have had enough and it was time for him to go home. He was told to F off. Then they got into a fight, which was thankfully caught on CCTV because Mr. McDade said that he had no memory of it. Mr. McDade pushed the manager, Mr. Davies, into the ground, into a gate where he sustained injuries. Mr. Davies was punched in the head by Mr. McDade, where he hurt his hand. So Mr. McDade eventually left the party and unsurprisingly, when everybody turned up back to work on the 7th of January, there was discussion about what happened there. His employment was terminated as a result of what happened at the Christmas party.
But Damien McDade contested this. The Fair Work Commission ultimately found in favour of the employer. I guess there's no surprise there, is there?
Look, there really shouldn't be any surprise. And Commissioner Williams said some sensible things, including society no longer readily accepts alcohol consumption as an excuse for bad behaviour and certainly not for physical violence, which I think is a contrast to the Stephen Keenan case. Commissioner Williams is saying, if you choose to get yourself so drunk that you wind up in difficulty at a work-related event, then shame on you. You're not going to be successful, in front of Commissioner Williams at least, in relation to seeking unfair dismissal remedies for that sort of conduct and behaviour when the employer has, he says, correctly terminated the employment.
This is nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
see what's on offer. Nice. No, your necklace. I wasn't.
Oh.
I don't think so. Although, funnily enough, the reason women wear necklaces is to draw attention to the breasts.
I don't.
No, I mean, subconsciously.
I don't. I wear this because my mother gave it to me before she died.
Yeah, well, I mean, she probably wore it to draw attention to hers, but I mean...
Sorry, can we not talk about my dead mother's breasts?
Yeah.
Really interesting. There have, of course, been cases where people are on the receiving end of this sort of behaviour from their colleagues and they take action against their employers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sexual harassment is a prime example of that. I'm wondering if in the Keenan case, one of the women who'd been at the after-party event turned round and not only complained against him but said, look, employer, you shouldn't have fed him all that alcohol in the first place, which had an impact on his behaviour. Would that person have any legal legs to stand on?
Well, look, they would, and that was indeed the subject of the complaints, which is, look, I was at the Christmas party and we had a drink afterwards and I was sexually harassed. I was kissed by Mr. Keenan against my will. I was certainly not consenting to this inappropriate approach by him, and so I'm making a complaint to my employer about sexual harassment on the basis that my employer should deal with it, and indeed my employer could be vicariously liable for the actions of its employees. And I think in the decision of Keenan, Vice President went some way to actually go through the provisions of the Sex Discrimination Act and talk about when vicarious liability might apply to an employer. So although it's not the jurisdiction of the Fair Work Commission to really make findings under the Sex Discrimination Act, he went on to say that he did not think that this sort of conduct after the event was the sort of conduct that the employer would be vicariously liable for, and used that as yet another reason why the after-party events should not be taken into account when considering whether or not termination was harsh.
The issues around sexual harassment strike me as quite complicated because alcohol reduces inhibitions and people will make romantic overtures to each other in those circumstances. When is it appropriate? When isn't it appropriate? What do people need to remember?
I think, Damien, the best thing that I can encourage people to remember is that consent is very, very important. So if somebody feels the same way as you, we know that people do meet their partners at work and potentially at Christmas parties. And it's just a matter of being aware when your advances are being reciprocated and when they are not.
Office, Christmas party, Jack and Jill are missing in camp.
So if somebody is obviously responding to you in a positive manner, then let's just assume that one thing leads to another, and you would hope that you will wind up in a consensual situation and everybody is happy.
There's an issue around power dynamics in a workplace as well. You've got the, you know, maybe the senior partner in the law firm and the young article clerk or legal secretary. I mean, there are real live issues here that people need to be aware of.
There absolutely are, and that power dynamic is absolutely critical. And my suggestion would be that no matter how much you are into the young person, if you are in a position of responsibility or seniority, or you have some sort of power dynamic or control over them in the workplace, they just might not be the person for you. And I think if those relationships go wrong, that's when things really start to come untangled.
There's also this kind of these notions about, I guess, accepted rituals, you know, sitting on Santa's knee or kissing under the mistletoe. I mean, there can be real live issues around those.
That's exactly right. Those sort of behavioural things that are probably part of the what goes on tour, stays on tour, their normal behaviour doesn't apply here. Those things inevitably in the cold light of day when you might see something on social media that you maybe don't remember doing, or your partner sees something on social media that looks like you're having far too good a time with somebody else, those things often wind up being back in the employer's lap as a problem. Either I was sexually harassed because I wasn't consenting to that, even though I looked like I was at the time, and therefore do something about this person who sexually harassed me because I'm feeling embarrassed, I'm feeling under pressure from my personal relationships to defend myself here. So it becomes this very, very tangled web, which does wind up back in usually the human resources manager's office to have to deal with.
It is an interesting issue about what is and isn't a workplace environment. There was a case, I think, a little while ago where I think Telstra perhaps provided a hotel room for employees who had travelled from other parts of the country for a Christmas party, and there were issues about what was and wasn't a workplace environment. Tell me about that case.
That was actually Telstra and Streeta, and there was, let's just call it, a lot of activity in that hotel room amongst ostensibly consenting individuals that did involve sexual intercourse. Other employees who were apparently trying to sleep made complaints afterwards and said that they felt sexually harassed because of the activities of the people who were engaging in sexual conduct in that particular hotel room. One of the people wound up being dismissed, and it resulted in an unfair dismissal. Obviously, part of the role of the Fair Work Commission is to decide clearly when dismissals are harsh, unfair and unreasonable. And because of the nature of the termination, this sometimes results in the Fair Work Commission needing to make judgments about when that sort of conduct is appropriate or inappropriate. But as I recall, Ms. Streeta was reinstated in that particular decision because they said, look, Telstra, you've put people in a hotel together. While obviously people should maybe have a bit more care for their fellow employees who might be trying to sleep while you're carrying on and partying, that doesn't mean that you get to restrict people's freedom, I guess, to engage in consensual sexual activity, albeit of a loud and noisy nature, while you're away on work-related events. I think that the days of employers being friendly and supportive and providing hotel accommodation so that employees don't have to necessarily travel home should probably be over now as the result of decisions like Telstra and Streeta. It's just too difficult. You'd be better off spending the money on cabs and getting everybody home safely.
You're listening to The Law Report on radio or via a podcast available from the RN website or from iTunes.
It's F-word Christmas, B-word. Let's get mother F-word drunk.
Greatest party ever. Hashtag open bar.
Who are you sending that to?
Everyone in Chicago.
Tonight, the decisions you make will have consequences that will haunt you for the rest of your professional life.
My conversation today is with Athena Kollmeyer. She's Managing Director of Workplace Law, which is a legal firm which specialises in employment law. Tell me, Athena, there's a new movie with Jennifer Aniston which is coming out this week called Christmas Office Party. Have you seen the trailer?
I have seen the trailer, Damien, and it actually gave me cold shivers.
Hey, Megan.
It's winter. Can we put Dancer and Prancer back in their stable?
Are you body shaming her right now?
Some people here might find your outfit offensive.
You can't silence us all.
I know why you took a medical leave.
I was sort of thinking, oh no, you know, the kinds of things that might inspire people to take silly actions at Christmas parties will probably all be collected in this movie.
It's one of those trailers where you just kind of shudder as you watch it.
You're absolutely right. And of course, real life is already bad enough in some cases, let alone having to glorify it, albeit hopefully in a very funny manner in relation to these sort of movies. But I am looking forward to watching it. I'm pretty sure that will count towards my continuing legal education units, won't it?
Yeah, I think so. It's a tax deduction, most definitely.
I love this company!
I think he meant to swing there.
And you can hear more about the cinematic merits of the movie Office Christmas Party with Jason DeRosso on The Final Cut. That's at 11:30 this coming Friday. So far we've been talking about cases where employers take action against the employee or another employee complains about the actions of a drunk employee. Have there been cases where employees who get drunk at a Christmas party take action against their employer?
Damien, there are. I thought we'd talk about maybe two workers' comp cases. Both of them are New South Wales workers' comp cases. One of them was the matter of Collins and Signature Blend from last year, 2015. This one, Mr. Collins was employed as a restaurant manager, and he wound up suffering very serious injuries, as you can imagine, when he fell 24 metres from an 8th-floor balcony of his apartment at about 5 o'clock on the 19th of December. And the reason that it wound up being a workers' comp claim was that he had been at a Christmas lunch with other employees. So while it was accepted that the lunch was in the course of the employment, but while he was there, he consumed quite a lot of alcohol and also took cocaine. So everybody went back to his apartment. They consumed some more alcohol and some more cocaine. And then he decided that it was going to be an awesome idea. The evidence was led that he jumped over a wet railing and off the balcony onto a grassy patch below. He probably would say that he fell inadvertently over the wet railing. But nevertheless, and I think in a 1-4 common sense, this decision found that Mr. Collins took himself outside the course of his employment when he decided to consume all of that alcohol and the cocaine, and that the injuries were therefore not received in the course of his employment. But I think it was certainly a good try to try and say that there was that sort of link between those very serious injuries and that it was the employer's responsibility.
There's been another interesting case in New South Wales along these lines. What was that case about?
That one was the matter of Whittingham and Ascot Air Conditioning. This was yet another one where alcohol was a factor. I don't exactly know why, but apparently there was a decision that two employees were going to crash tackle each other after consuming a lot of alcohol.
At the office Christmas party?
At the office Christmas party. So Mr. Scott alleged that Mr. Whittingham ran across a driveway outside the workshop, charged at him when he was trying to crash tackle him. Mr. Scott cleverly stepped to one side, and Mr. Whittingham, who was pelting down the driveway, fell into the garden bed with a raised concrete gutter around it and unfortunately suffered injuries to his back and right shoulder. That then resulted in a claim for workers' compensation. And the employer tried to say, well, look, Mr. Whittingham's conduct was serious misconduct, a bit like taking cocaine, and that should have taken him outside the scope of the employment relationship. So these guys are engaging in horseplay of their own time, not under any encouragement from me. And why should I be picking up the tab on my workers' comp insurance for this?
What did the court find?
This was sort of a funny finding. The commission found that Mr. Whittingham, who was the one engaging in the crash tackling, was actually too intoxicated as the result of the free alcohol that had been provided to him to have the requisite intention to have committed serious and willful misconduct. So he was too drunk to actually intend to be bad. And so on that basis, the injuries were sustained in the course of the employment, and that workers' compensation claim got up.
That case and others like it suggest that employers do have a responsibility to what? Monitor the amount of alcohol being consumed and if there are problems, to cut back? What does this tell us about what the obligations are on an employer?
Well, look, it does confirm, I think, that employers do have a duty of care to their employees, and that part of that duty of care is to take reasonable steps to mitigate things that are foreseeable. So if it is foreseeable that you're going to give everybody an unlimited, unsupervised supply of alcohol and then go on a bushwalk, then you might accept that it would be foreseeable that someone would stumble and fall over and damage themselves. So that would be a good example of where an employer had not done what they were supposed to do in terms of managing their duty of care. And I think that's a really important message for employers. When you're thinking about doing things like having amazing Christmas events at exotic locations where people are going to be required to jump on trampolines or take a trapeze lesson, engage in bushwalking, any of those other sorts of things, you might want to perhaps think about not serving alcohol while you're encouraging people to engage in those fun activities, because I think it would be reasonably foreseeable to anyone that, you know, mixing alcohol and those sort of things would ultimately result reasonably in a foreseeable injury to somebody at some point.
It's Christmas time and the office party. We'll get drunk and do annoying things.
No fear, I'm happy to table dance on cubicle square.
She didn't even know she put on a show until next morning. Take a look at that, it's posted on the internet.
Of course, in this day and age, social media means that, you know, what happens in Vegas doesn't stay in Vegas. There's often a permanent record of what's taken place. Do you see that having an impact on these sorts of issues?
Absolutely. And look, it absolutely can. I'm sure I'm not the only workplace relations lawyer out there who will always have a look when matters come across my desk at what's happening on Facebook for the particular people that are involved in the matter, what's happening in any other sort of social forum, whether that's a lawyer such as myself looking at conduct and behaviour for the purpose of dealing with a litigated matter, or whether it's the human resources person trying to work out what really went on at the Christmas party. All of that material is available.
What can and should employers be doing to reduce risk?
Look, I think there are a couple of sensible things that could be done. The first thing that I would suggest people do is remind everybody about what the standards of conduct are that are expected in the workplace. And of course, those standards should be the same standards that apply on a normal weekday doing normal work, as in, please don't swear at each other, please don't try and touch each other, please be nice to people. I would also suggest that some dedicated planning go into the food and alcohol that might be available at the event. I do remember somebody calling me several years ago and saying, look, we've got a budget of $500 for a barbecue. Do you think it's okay if we spend $450 on beer and $50 on sausages and bread? And after I picked myself up off the floor, I said, no, I don't think that's appropriate. There should be appropriate amounts of food to mitigate the effects of whatever alcohol you have available.
Do you think it's also a good idea to have a designated person who won't drink and can perhaps kind of make sure people are getting home?
Absolutely. And look, usually that falls to my friends, the human resources managers, but honestly, I think anybody who's got responsibility for managing employees should be aware when somebody has tipped over the line, although you might wind up getting assaulted for your troubles or at least told to F off. But those conversations about, I think the night is over for you, here's a cab charge voucher, go home, don't take the cab charge voucher out to the next place, but go home, are sensible things to do.
Mm. Finally, do you think there's a danger that we're going too far? We're becoming a killjoy nanny state? Is that a problem, do you think?
I fairly regularly have this conversation, which is along the lines of, I feel like every year I'm the Grinch and I'm ruining people's Christmas, because this is something that should be a celebration at the end of a year of work. Like, congratulations, we're done, we're all off to enjoy a couple of weeks' break and watch the cricket and sit in the sun. And this should be a social gathering of well-meaning colleagues wishing each other well at the end of the year. Unfortunately, and probably I think, Damien, our noble profession has something to do with this, because of the amount of litigation that's arisen from these sort of quote-unquote fun events, and where you have employers, as in the Borrell case, where the commission is criticising the employer for allowing, you know, unrestricted flowing alcohol, and where you've got liability for ridiculous things, where somebody has tried to crash tackle somebody at a party and nevertheless that's wound up being a workers' comp claim, then the liability issues, I think, force employers to start thinking like a nanny state, or indeed cancelling these sort of events altogether and simply having a cup of coffee and wishing each other well on the Christmas Eve.
Well, Athena Kohlmeier, great talking to you. I hope you have a lovely Christmas party.
Thank you, Damien. We had ours. We went to watch an A-League game and it was very calm and non-eventful. Thank you.
Maybe this Christmas will mean something more.
That's it for the Law Report this week. A big thanks to the always sensible Anita Barrow, and also the all-singing, all-dancing Brendan O'Neill, who was technical producer this week. And the song you heard at the start of the program is from Vicky Shea, a Winnipeg radio announcer. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk to you next week with more law.
Someone we've lost for reasons we can't quite recall. Oh, oh. Maybe this Christmas.
From the founder of Apple to comedian Andy Samberg, from the head of Netflix to the man who built the World Wide Web, from the creators of the record-breaking podcast Serial to startups that are breaking ground right here in Australia, if you want to hear from the movers and the shakers, media, technology and culture around Australia and the globe, there is literally one show. It also happens to be the most literally named show. Download this show with me, Mark Fennell. Media, technology, culture. Find it on the RN website now or on the ABC Radio app.